This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, we bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I got two of my homies, my Mississippi homies with me, Mr. A.D., Mr. Anthony Dale, Mr. D. Ray Holmes, Nesbitt, Mississippi. I think that's where y'all live, somewhere around in there.
Close
enough. So
that's it.
So this episode is going to be a little different than, what I normally talk about, because... You know, I feel like everybody talks about gear, everybody talks about deer, ducks, you know, hunting tactics. Nobody really talks about mental health when all that stuff goes away, or like me 2 years ago when I had my concussion and couldn't hunt, you know, and that depression started setting in real bad. So we're going to talk about mental health a little bit today, and somebody out there might be struggling with it, and we're going to try to hook y'all up and figure out some ways to combat it and some ways you can deal with it. So I'm gonna go with Mr. D. Ray first, man. So when you think about mental health, what does mental health mean to you?
To me, mental health means just your mentality, your mind, the stability of your mind, when how you deal with things. Now, the true test of your stability of your mind is how you deal with something when there's a conflict or something goes wrong. You know, everyone is able to, you know, get along in terms of handling their normal task with life. But when something goes awry, we experience death, we experience loss, whether that's financial loss, personal loss, anything like that, that's when your stability of your mental health can really be tested.
Right. What about you, AD?
Man, I totally agree with D. Ray on that. It's, you know, when you hear the word mental, the first thing you think about is your mind and your mental thoughts. But also, I also think about your physical well-being, you know, your eating right, exercising, you know, just trying to keep your physical body in shape. And I think that plays a huge role into your mental health as well.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with both of y'all. Because I know, you know, watching my dad grow, you know, when I was younger, watching my dad grow up, like my dad was not a very emotional person per se. I think I'd only seen him cry one time. And that was at his father's funeral. And so like growing up, like he wasn't one of those guys that was like, man, you don't need to cry. He never did say that stuff to me, but I never seen him cry. So it was like one of them things, like I had to act tough in front of him because I figured he would say something, but he never really did. But I seen other fathers, like on the baseball field, you know, a kid get hit by a pitch or something, they start crying, and you know, they start yelling at a man, be a man, be a man. Like, don't rub it. Don't rub it. I'm like, man, that kid's hurt, man. Like, right. What's he supposed to do? You know? So D-Ray, you grew up in Tennessee, correct?
That's right. And, kind of like your dad, my dad thought that tears cost money. So you start crying, start sniveling and whimpering about something. Hey, you got to tighten up, son. Like, this is not the moment. I don't know if it's like, you know, farting in church. It's not the time or the place or something like that. It's taboo to show your emotions, at least when I was a kid growing up. So it's just one of those things that you just kind of had to adapt.
I got you. Was it the same for you, AD? Like, was your pops like that?
Well, you know, my dad, he wasn't very vocal. You know, he didn't say much. He never showed any emotions. And that's the way he was raised. He was kind of like, you know, you see how I react to things. You see how I do things. That's what you should do. Funny enough, now that he's older, in his 80s, and the last 15 or 20 years, he never said, growing up, he never said, I love you. He never hugged you or said any of that stuff. But now, the last 15 or 20 years, he's always telling me, I love you. You'll hug me. Even like with my kids, he loves his grandkids. And I think that kind of brought out a softer side to him when he started having grandkids, especially, you know, with my daughters and the girls. So I grew up just seeing it, but he wasn't verbal with being a man, you're not supposed to cry. It was just something that he did not do. He did not express his emotions at all. It was always just lead by example.
Yeah, that's exactly how my pops was, man. Like, even to this day, man, like, I can remember my dad saying, I love you, like, one time, but, like, he showed it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to say it. Like, you know, and even, you know, on his deathbed, like, the day before he died, like, he couldn't speak or anything, and I grabbed his hand, and he squeezed my hand. I was like, I love you, Pops. And he squeezed my hand real tight, you know, like, it was known. Like, he didn't have to say anything.
Yeah.
That sounds like a blessing, because I know when my dad was pissed off, I knew exactly what was up. He wasn't going to sugarcoat it. He wasn't going to calm down. It's a raging volcano for a few minutes. But still, he wasn't going to hold it under his collar. It just.
Yeah.
And like today, I called my dad. And by the way, happy Father's Day to you, gentlemen. Today is Father's Day.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Happy Father's Day.
And I called my dad today and, you know, wished him happy Father's Day. And my wife and I, we talked to him before we got off the phone. He said, I love you. That's something, you know, I didn't hear that growing up at all. So, yeah. I always told my daughters that, you know, them growing up, I would read to them at night. I would attend, you know, all the school functions or what have you. And then whenever they went off to college, even when they went to school, I hug them in the morning and say, hey, I love you, kiss them on the cheek or something like that. I always showed emotions, you know, with my daughter, something that I didn't receive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's healthy too. You got to be a natural self, no matter what kind of person you are, father you are, parent you are, whatever. You got to be true to yourself in terms of expressing love in a positive way. You know, don't go off on the kid or nothing like that, but just communicate in the most appropriate manner. In that setting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. You know, like I said, my dad, I knew he loved me. He didn't have to say it, but, you know, I make sure my son, you know, every morning or whenever, you know, we get up, you know, he's going somewhere, I'm going to drop him off somewhere, you know, make sure, hey, son, I love you. I mean, because nowadays, man, you never know. That might be the last time
right.
you talk, you know.
That's right.
So I try to make sure he knows that and, you know, stuff like that. But I guess, like, when you talk about mental health, I guess men at a young, early age are taught to hide their emotions, hide their, you know, women cry, men don't cry,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that. So why do you think men hold those struggles in now? when it's more out there, you know, it's 2026, you know, everybody talks about mental health now. It's more out there now than it was back in, you know, the early 80s, early 90s. You know, there's people that you can actually go talk to now.
Right.
But us, especially black men, I feel like they don't want to open up to anybody. Why is that?
Well, I would say this. I'm not a professional, first off. I'm just speaking from my experiences. I think it is when you're younger and they tell you to don't show that type of emotion. I think in a way they're trying to protect you from being bullied, harassed, chastised by other kids your age, because, you know, you're still young and developing and you don't know how to express yourself in the right way anyway. So you could just hold that. But one thing that they don't say that we know now, you know, in hindsight, wait till you get home and express that frustration with us, communicate with us what's going on, so you don't have any surprises coming up later in the road. I think that's kind of like the second part of the story that we are like discovering now. Like, hey, you have all this balled up emotion. You can come home with that. You can communicate with your parents or loved ones what's going on and what's got you frustrated. And you can try to, you know, pivot that frustration in, you know, communicating healthily, your exercise, or if you need to take it a step further and your parents may not have those type of skills, you can seek help if it needs to get to that point, you know?
Yep, I heard that. What about you, Eddie? Your microphone's cutting out a little bit too, Daryl.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to rehash what Daryl just said about, you know, when you're younger, but as far as being an adult, I think one of the biggest things that I see is financial stability. I think a lot of men, they feel like if they are not making a certain amount of money, that they're not accomplished. So I think financial stability, I think relationships, I think, you know, as far as their job is concerned, I just feel like that weighs heavy on a lot of men. And especially, you know, men that try to really work hard and try to have something and, you know, it's just not working out for them. And I think if you have that supported, whether you're married, you know, whether you have a boyfriend, girlfriend or whatever, I believe if you had a support, you know, even from your parents or from your siblings, I think that would help out a lot. But as far as adults are concerned, I really think a lot of it is trying to be successful in life. And at the end of the road, that's what a lot of people want to do, is be successful.
Yeah,
absolutely. And don't let social media drive you and hold you on what you think success is. Exactly. I think that contributes to a lot of mental health issues. People comparing themselves, you know, we all know comparisons are the thief of joy. So you know, comparison yourself to somebody online that you don't even know. They don't know you. And you're thinking, this is the status I need to achieve. These are the, you know, the type of income that I need to make, when it is all a facade.
Yeah, I agree.
Money does not make you happy. I mean, they've done studies about people that have been billionaires across the world, and they show that they are miserable and alone.
Yeah. And you see these videos all the time. Like, I seen probably 20 of them last night, man. I don't know if it was a skit. I don't know if it was real, but so you got like a man and a woman. They're in a relationship and they're at like a restaurant. And the man is like, "Hey, I forgot my wallet. Can you pay for this meal?" And I can't tell you how many women in there was like, "Oh, I guess you're going to be washing dishes then, because I ain't paying for it. You took me out." I'm like, man, like, you supposed, you know, they were expecting the man to pay for, but it's like, hey, I don't know if it was, like I said, I don't know if it was a skit or whatever, but I'm like, man, if my woman,
you saw a camera and a microphone, I'm gonna say it's a skit.
Yeah, it probably was. Like, even if it was, man, like, my thing is, you know, like, my woman should be there to help me, support me. Like, hey, baby, I forgot my wallet. Can you get, yeah, I got you or whatever. But like, one lady, assuming that
you think that she really likes you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of guys be chasing people that don't even like them, for real. Like, she likes what you can do for them. She doesn't really like you. You know what I mean? So you gotta first figure out, does this person truly like me? And then you can try to go through those mental gymnastics of, in that scenario, oh, I truly forgot my wallet. You know, can you handle this? Of course, People make mistakes.
Yeah, people make mistakes, but it's seems like the world now, man, like that's how it goes though. Like, you know, a woman expects a man to provide everything. And they get to have their little money to the side. Well, we sit here paying for everything, the car notes, the mortgage and everything. And then as soon as you come up a little short 1 month, she ready to leave. Oh, you broke. That's broke people problems. Hey, I've been supporting you. Like,
you that's know, when you have to find that right partner, you know,
that's right.
That's for you. And, you know, I always believe it, you know, I've been married 30 years this year. You work together, you can be very successful.
Absolutely.
You can have something. But when you are divided, you're going to always struggle, in my opinion. And it's, once you commit to each other in front of God, you know, for better or worse, and you're a team, you're no longer separated. You're a team now.
Yeah.
That's right.
You become one.
You become one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, nowadays that just ain't the thing. You know, like my wife, I don't care to tell nobody, like she makes way more money than I do. That don't bother me.
Right.
You know, some people, you know, some men, like that's like taboo. I can't, right. No, I can't handle a woman make more money than me. Like, yeah, that's your partner. You know, that's your wife. Who cares? The money's exactly. Going to the same house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she starts, you know, possibly starts throwing it over your head, you know, bringing it, you know, holding it over your head. That's a, that's another conversation for another day. But
yeah, absolutely.
Like, if you got a good woman, that ain't gonna never come up.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
They're going to support you. But let me ask y'all this. I'm going to start with you, D-Ray. Have you ever been in a situation where you were suffering in silence? Like you had a lot going on, a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
But you
absolutely
just kept it buried deep down in you and didn't say nothing to nobody.
Absolutely. I think it's that, I can think of a time when I was just in college and trying to adapt to going from being a young man to an adult, adjusting to adulting myself, you know, making sure I'm on time to my classes. I'm trying to, you know, have a little bit of a social life. I'm trying to, you know, also work, you know, while I'm in school too. And it took a while. It took a while to adapt to just kind of the rat race. You know, I'm trying to be seen, but not seen. I'm trying to work, but I ain't trying to work 40 hours. I'm trying to be a good student. And it's just all, it felt like I was just a nonstop cycle of a rat race. And it just came to a point at one time that I didn't even realize that I was doing it until really much years later. Cause I'm eating worse. I'm stress eating. I didn't even know what that was at the time I was in college. You know, I'm being a little short with people that I'm not sleeping well, and I'm just truly irritated. And I didn't have the skills to know how to process that stuff at that time.
Right. Yeah. What about you, AD?
Oh, man. Yes. and like I told you in my previous podcast, I was a conservation officer and I worked for the state of Mississippi. And, you know, I was married, you know, my wife and I was, you know, a young couple. I had almost a teenage daughter at the time. And we ended up having, two more blessings within the 15 months apart. We had two more kids. And, you know, working for the state, you're going to have to work two or three jobs. If you're a state employee, if you're law enforcement, you're going to have to work two or three jobs. And it was just to the point where, you know, I was ready for something else. And I was just praying that God would bring me something that's better for me, my family, you know, where I can make more money. And because I work at two or three jobs just to try to make ends meet. And so that was a huge time for me, you know, because the job I really loved, but I just wasn't making the money. So end up, you know, moving, picking up my whole family. We had three kids. I had a 1-year-old and a 10-month-old and an 11-year-old. Quit, dropped everything I had, and I moved on faith 3 hours away, got a new job, something I'd never done before. But God told me this was for me, for my family. And that's been 20 years ago now. And so I leaped out on faith and going through a tough time. The people I worked with, you know, being an African-American in a predominantly white field, that was tough. And then most of the people I dealt with, hunters, they were, you know, it was one of those deals I had to deal with. So all of that was taking a toll on me at that time. So I was dealing with that and plus the financial piece of it. And here I am 20 years later doing something totally different, something I love to do. I'm doing. My girls are in college now. They've done well. We truly enjoy the area that we're in right now.
Yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, I think all men, when you look at it back at some point in time, have had to suffer in silence. You know, like D-Ray said, like I was in college, my grandpa died, mm-hmm. my favorite uncle died, you know, and I started drinking.
Yeah.
You know, and people was always asking, see, well, you straight? Yeah, I'm good. Like, you know, and I wish when people asked me that, you know, I felt like close enough where I could like just start spilling it. But right. at the same time, I was like, man, I'm going to tell this dude this. He's going to think I'm soft. He's going to think I'm this. So I'm just going to keep it down. And then it really got bad once my pops passed, man. It was like, you know, I'm a man of faith, but it's like, I forgot all about God in that moment. Because I was so upset with him, you know, for taking my father away at a crucial time in my life when I felt like I needed him the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned pretty fast. You can't do it by yourself. You'll go crazy. Amen. Yeah. You got to have that help. And then, you know, God will make you, you know, bend down to him at some point, you know, and he just got so bad. I fell to my knees one day and I was like, I can't take this no more. Like, you got to take it off of me. I was like, 'cause I'm gonna go crazy. And, you know, once I remembered everything that my mom and dad taught me growing up, you know, prayer works. I've seen it on two eyes. I felt it. I've seen it. So once I started leaning on him again, man, it got a lot better. I started talking to people more, started talking to him more, started going back to church, you know, all that, man. And I feel like a lot of men just don't want to do that. They feel like they have to handle everything themselves.
Be strong. Figure it out. You don't need nobody.
You know, figure it out. And a lot of times, that ain't, you know, that's not going to work out for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, right. So, you know, if there's somebody out there now, you know, that we're, you know, talking about this, that needs, you know, to talk about it, I'm talking about anybody. You know, y'all can reach out to me. Well, most everybody's got my number. If you ain't got my number, hit me up, Instagram, somebody. You know, if you need that person to talk to, you know, if you feel like you're at your wit's end, like, you know, call me. I don't care what time of day it is. Because I know, man, if I had y'all back in the day, you know, still had some of my boys I still talk to this day. But like I said, I just felt like I couldn't talk to nobody, man. But,
yeah,
you know, now that I'm older, you know, I know I got y'all too. I know I got Trey. I know I got my best friend. You know, I got people that, yeah, I know I
had a tissue ready for you, Jay. Hey, yo, burn this down, brother. I got you.
Yeah, man. I know I got people I can lean on, man. So you just got to find that person. And, you know, and I think to me, I think it's harder to deal with emotional pain than physical pain, if that makes sense.
Elaborate. Tell me what you mean.
Physical pain, man, you know, like something, you know, like you break your leg or you break your arm or something like that. It's something you can deal with. I feel like you can deal with that pain.
It's temporary.
Yeah, it's temporary. Right. You know, that emotional pain, you know, especially when it's somebody close to you, like a family member that passes, like, yeah, especially, you know, my pops, my grandpa, my grandfather, you know, my favorite uncle, those are all. Them two, my uncle and my grandpa, within like 2 weeks or a 2 month span of each other.
Mm.
And then, you know, and then in between there, you had some aunts and uncles. And then boom, here comes your dad. And then right after my dad was my mom's older sister. Boom. you know, and then couple years after that, it was another aunt, another uncle, you know, just boom, 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 you know. And I feel like it didn't hit me until after the funerals, if that makes sense. You know, the funerals, I was good. Visitations, I was good, but like I'd go home and I'd just be sitting by myself, or I'd be on
quiet,
or I'd be out hunting somewhere. Mm-hmm. I start thinking about it.
Absolutely.
And that's when it would boom. That's when it hit. And I'm talking about waterworks. Couldn't stop.
Deer walking by you like, what is wrong with this guy up here?
Yeah. And then, in those moments, man, it's just like, how in the world am I going to get this off of me? You know, because it ain't like me spraining my ankle. I know I'm going to be good in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, it stays with you.
Yeah.
So to me, I feel like, you know, that physical pain is easier to deal with than an emotional pain.
I agree.
That's what I meant by that. So.
Totally agree.
But it's one of those things, man, like, you got your friends. You know, you got your family. You know, as you get older, you feel like you know those few core people that you can call on that's going to tell you the truth and
right.
lean on. Back then, when I was younger, you know, I didn't know if I had those. My friends were that close. You know, I didn't want to open up to them because, like I said, I didn't want to get, you know, chastised as the guy in the group that was soft. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like that's the way with a lot of people now. They don't want to open up because of that. But I feel like, man, if you need that help, like, reach out to somebody. I don't care if it's a professional, somebody across the road, somebody at work, like, find that person that you can lean on, because you can't do it by yourself.
Right. I think the biggest thing is learning those skills of how to cope with loss, with changes, and try to find that spirit to keep going through. Because like you said, we go through life and let's say you do have your friends that you can lean on, but then life is life. And, you know, they get married, they have children, they have a family, they have responsibilities. So they're not going to always be available for that phone call. A lot of people do say, hey, call me any time of the night, no matter what, I got you. Some people will be there, some people won't, but, you know, you can still reach out to those people. But I still think it is important for you to, you know, pray. I think it's important to you to, you know, write down, or, you know, figure out a way of how to process your feelings, because, you know, everyone is not going to be able to answer you right then and there. And you still will have to manage those emotions yourself. Right. You can debrief them after you've, you know, thought about it and processed your emotions. You know, they may call you back, you know, 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours or something like that. But you just give them the recap, but you still in that moment have to figure out how to process your emotions yourself.
Now, one thing about it, those friends that you may want to lean on. So those friends need to be like a job interview. So you need to do a thorough job.
Absolutely.
Interviewing those friends to make sure those are the right people you need to lean on.
Right.
You definitely don't want to get the wrong advice. And like you said, see, Will and Darryl, you know, if it comes down to it, just, you know, seek professional help if you can. Talk to a pastor of your church. If you're not with a church, I'm sure you can just go to a church and find a pastor or somebody to sit down and talk to. But definitely, if you got a good friend that you can call and say, hey, man, I'm going through this. For instance, you two, especially Darryl, since Darryl lives close to me, I met Darryl through your podcast. And we were talking the other day, we was having lunch with a friend of ours, and I think Darryl and I known each other, I can't remember the time frame, but we probably talked once a day, if not text each other, you know, every day.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate you, Bill. Appreciate you.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
and like you say, that when I was saying something about that physical health, we even got together, you know, exercise together, you know, working on that physical health. You know, at the same time, we're talking, but not knowing it, we work on that mental health at the same mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we get, you know, two for one. So, and that's very important. You know, find that person that you can connect with. My wife does it. She has a group that she work out with every morning. They bounce things off of each other because her friends have daughters. She have daughters. And, you know, So it's one of those things that be selective on what you want to share. And you never know when that relationship may end. All of us been through it. One guy, the person that you think that's down with you until the end of time. And next thing you know, it's ended for some apparent reason that you don't know. So just do a thorough job, kind of make it like a job interview and make sure that person is the right person you need to, you know, vent to, share your thoughts with, need help, you know, just I need to talk to somebody about, you know, personal, especially personal matters.
Right, right. Because
your personal matters being told to other people and things of that nature, because that's something that's very sacred and something that you know, pretty much conveyed to that person. It should be between you and that person.
Right. Yeah. I went down, for Trey's wedding or whatever. And, his mom, first one to say something to me, she's like, man, every time I talk to Trey, he's like, hold on, mom, I'll call you back. C. Will's on the phone. You know, she's like, I feel like you long lost son. She's like, I'm glad he's got that person, you know, that he can lean on, you know, besides Nick, his brother, you know.
Right.
And, my best friend's the same way. Like, we don't talk every day. We might text 2-3 times a week, but, like, he knows, and I know, you know, something's up. Like, he knows he can come to me. You know, he's got a baby on the way. He's been doing that lately, you know, trying to get prepared for that. But it's like those people you meet, you know, especially when you get older. You know, my circle was real small. My circle was real big in college. Huge. Like, guys like 8 huge. 10, I'm talking about, we used to go roll out 25, 30 deep to every party.
Oh, no.
And I might still talk to 4 or 5 of them today, you know, and I know they got my back, but I was in a situation, man, you know, my best friend was in Iraq. And I met a dude, you know, we had the same likes. We played ball, you know, we just had the same, it was like, I don't know, we just hit it off.
Right.
And I was like, man, this dude's going to be, you know, like one of my friends for the long haul, man. Female come through.
Uh-oh.
That he didn't like. You know, I was dating at the time or whatever, and I was like, hey, bro, like, she's going to stay here for the night. In the morning, I'm taking her, you know, to another town, and she's about to start school. And lost his mind that she was staying there that night. I said, bro, you've had, I don't know how many females come through this apartment on the
y'all didn't have bunk beds, did you? Like, what's going on?
No, man, it was just one of them, like, if I'm paying half the rent, man. And she's staying there for like 3-4 hours maybe, and then the next morning we rolling, you know, because we spent all day packing pretty much that whole day. And it was just one of them things, man, that, you know, he would bring, I don't know how many people through all the time. Like, I'm trying to go to bed.
Expose them. Go ahead. Like, I'm not in business.
But, you know, he, you know, bringing people through at all hours of the night, you know, smoking and this. Like, bro, I got.
They call it dry snitching. See, Will. You know that.
I ain't gonna mention no names, but but you know how it is, man. Like, I ain't spoke to dude in probably almost 20 years now over a situation that could have been handled, you know, very, very easily. And
it super was, minor situations.
Yeah, it was one of them dudes that I thought, you know, he, and like, even some of the people that I, you know, that I talk to now, I was like, man, y'all still cool? Like, bro, I ain't talked to him in 20 years. I mean, y'all was like close. I said, yeah. Like, we were super close, you know, and hated my best friend when he got back from Iraq, man. I don't know what beef they had, but Lord have mercy. They, you talking about some knockout, drag out fights, man, back in the day, UFC before UFC, you know, but.
Oh no. What is going on?
Yeah, it was, I can tell y'all some stories, man, but yeah. Getting off subject a little bit, like how can the women in our lives, you know, help with a man's mental health? Cause I know, you know, AD kind of hit on earlier, like you got to find that right partner. So how can that partner, when you're going through something like that, like, you know, help you out?
Support. One word, man. They got to support you. And no matter what it is, you know, you have to encourage that person. And just like I was just telling you guys about the job that I have now, when I left the State Department of Wildlife, you know, I was like scared to death. I mean, I was like, well, I never done this before. She said, hey, research the job. He said, read up on it, educate yourself on it. And, you know, when you know the history of the company, I'm going to be honest with you. She got that job for me. Yeah. And because she was ready for the change, too. So, yeah. I mean, she supported me to no end. And, you know, I did that and I went through interview, man, had a great interview and everything worked out. But, man, she, if I need something, you know, she had that support. I mean, she's my rock. And the same thing goes for hunting. She know that I grew up hunting. When we dated, I hunted. We've been married. I take hunting trips. And it's like she got me. You know, when hunting season's not in, it's her and I. Hunt season start, AD belongs to the woods. And she's cool with it, as long as I let her know. And so we work on the timing and all of that stuff. And she's cool with it. And, you know, we're great. Now, we support the girls. You know, I have two daughters that are still in college, and both of them play collegiate sports. So we're going to travel, you know, to support them. But when I'm not doing that, and if I'm not on call on a weekend for work, I'm pretty much going to spend my time at my deer camp.
Right. Yeah, that's it, man. Like, well, that's a good segue for you talking about hunting. How has hunting helped you deal with stress? I'm going to go with D-Ray first.
Man, it gives me opportunity to reflect on my work week, gives me opportunity to decompress from the things that are stressing me out. It's nothing more peaceful to me, just, you know, getting ready to go into the woods. I'm putting my gear on. I may be unloading my ATV off a trailer, ready to go in a field, park it somewhere, and I'm just walking through the woods, hoping I don't spook nothing, climbing my tree, whether I'm in a saddle or getting in a ladder, and then just sitting there in complete darkness and then just watching the day start. That is the most peaceful, surreal thing. No matter what, I love to see a day start, whether it's turkey season, I'm sitting on the ground and it's happening, I'm in a blind or in flooded timber or something like that when it's the duck season, or in a tree when it's deer season. I just love to see the day begin, and it just gives me opportunity to just be so thankful to be in the woods, because a lot of people don't know about this joy. A lot of people have not seen the sunrise from the woods before. So I think it's the best thing out. I'm ready for fall. Summer, you could go away. It's hot.
Big facts.
Yeah, man. This is something I look forward to every year. The older I get, the more I like to invite friends, introduce them to the sports. I like taking my daughters hunting. I guess I'm more of a host now. I like inviting people to the camp, hanging out, you know, building a bonfire, and just seeing other people, you know, harvest animals and introducing them to the sport of something that I grew up doing and something that's near and dear to me that I love doing. And every year I take a couple hunt trips, whether it's waterfowl hunting, whether it's turkey hunting, whether it's deer hunting. But it's that time away from work, from the pressures of this everyday life when I'm down at my deer camp, which is on a dead end road, surrounded by nothing. Yeah. And my wife asked me all the time, she says, how do you just go down there and sit down? I said,
how can you not?
No cars, no Wi-Fi. And it's just, that's it. I take my groceries with me and I don't leave for 4 or 5 days. And I'm there.
It's peaceful down there.
It's peaceful. I can walk out my front door in the early morning with a cup of coffee, and I can hear 4 or 5 different birds gobbling, and I can walk to it from my front porch.
Yeah, you need some more lights down there.
No, you don't. Hey, he but, keep that light. He keep that light on, and what you don't know, he turned into a DJ about 9:30 at night. He started playing the tunes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's, you know, that's, you had to break out the turtle box, man.
Yeah, so on the way down there, I called him. I was like, dog, like, Kentucky is dark. Mississippi, man, I'm telling you, that's like the ancestors dark down there, man. Like,
there's reflective lines on the road now. Come on down. Keep going.
I was like, where am I going? Then when I got there, I was like, oh, yeah, he needs some more lights out here. And one little pole ain't going to do it. But it was cool, though, you know, sitting out there. And, you know, he got the turtle box out and, you know, and,
Had a little fire going.
And next day, you know, he cooked his lunch. And, you know, both days he was out there just hanging out, man. You know, with that camaraderie, man, you can't beat that.
You can't beat it, man. And just like I say, if you harvest something, that's the icing on the cake.
Right.
But the cake is us getting together as hunters and enjoying something that, you know, that we all love to do. God's greatest creation is wildlife. You know, one of my
absolutely. Opinion. Not to deviate from the camping, then I ain't to cut you off, AD, but I still chuckle about setting both of y'all on fire at that camp house. Boy, it tickled me.
Bruh.
Whenever I hear AD clear his throat twice, I'm crying laughing, okay? I'm crying laughing.
So, what he's talking about, guys, ladies and gentlemen, he cooked, was it a goose?
That's right. I gave speckled belly goose.
Speckled belly goose, and he put the world's hottest whatever in there. I don't know what you
it was like jalapeno out. Chips. Y'all eating them jalapeno chips before.
I was eating the sea salt chips.
Well.
And he did cook some of the summer salt or that some of the sausage that had them jalapenos in it. But that one, bro, whatever you put in that speckled goose.
I gotta tell the story right, because you are not telling it right. So I think I gave you your plate first. And then I gave AD his plate. So AD eats it and he starts snarling. Whoa, this is a little spicy. So I'm chuckling at him. I look over at you. I was like, hey, how is this? He's like, man, I'm on fire. I'm like, what? What is going on? This isn't that spicy.
I couldn't.
AD's still snarling. I'm on the floor crying.
It was good, but it was a little spicy, man. But it was definitely good, and one thing I can say about D. Ray, he's gonna cook at camp, man. What I like about it, he brings all the tools of the trade as far as cooking goes, and it was something I never had before. I never had speckled belly goose before. It was a little spicy, but it was good.
I won't put the spice element in it. I'll just give you, you know.
Yeah, just
give, just give you a different flavor next time.
Flavor, because that was too. I like spice, but that was too much for me.
Ooh, that was so comical to me. Lord Jesus, that was so funny.
But you know, speaking of mental health, as far as that trip is concerned, I think. See, Will, you were out for school break. I was on vacation. Daryl, I think you was on break as well. And that time together, you know, with all the other guys that came to the club, it was about six or seven of us down there at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a great time, you know, all of us talking, having a good time, just, you know, talking about life.
Yeah.
And we left there. We came in as strangers, I should say, but we left there as friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because, it was dope. You know, especially AT2. I still owe that man a 30-cal rifle when I see him. So that's just funny, man. You know, it just, you know, stuff like that. It just happened to him, and he took it like a sport too, because you know he wasn't mad.
Oh, you know, he should because he do the same thing every year until. He needs to get a 30-cal. Every year he's going to wound a deer and we cannot find it. But maybe this year.
I still don't see how we didn't find it, because I mean it was blood everywhere. Yeah. Ish. I don't know. I don't know.
We tracked it for a long ways.
Yeah. But
yeah. So I guess, you know, not this year, but 2027, we got a duck hunt planned. The group of us are going on a duck hunt. So looking forward to that. You know, we already been talking about that and you know, things that we're going to try to do to, you know, discuss and just have fun and hang out. You know, I think, you know, hunting trips for men is a good outlet, you know,
to absolutely
to just talk about things. I didn't know it, C. Will, but you know, your cousin that's coming with us, he's a minister. So that's great. That's great for us. We can, you know, talk about things, you know, have a devotional. I have a devotional with my coworkers every Wednesday morning. And that's been tremendous for the group of guys that I work with. Every Wednesday morning, we have a devotional. We read a passage from the Bible, and we have a prayer list of people that we add to our prayer list. And that's been really good for us as far as work is concerned.
Right, yeah. And Kenny, man, he's one of them guys, he's very, very knowledgeable with the Bible, just like his daddy. You know, my uncle, he's a pastor too, so he takes after his dad. But, like, you know, any question that you have, like, he's one of them guys, like, he don't care to talk to you about it. You know, some people, you know, you run into, you know, they're on vacation or something, they don't want to talk about stuff like it. You know, but he, you know, it's 24/7 with him. Like, hey, you want to talk about this? Let's, you know, let's break it down. You know, let's have a conversation about it. Cause what I've known, what I figured out, you know, in my almost 40 years of living now, you never know what somebody's going through.
Absolutely.
You know, right. that, you know, that slight hello or, you know, thank you or how you doing, man? Like, that could be the difference of them going off the deep end or them like, man, you know, I can make it. Like, you just never know what that person's going through, you know? So it's like, you always want to go try to go that extra mile to, you know, to be nice to people and, try to be that good Christian that, you know, that you can be, cause you never know that, you know, that person might be at their wit's end and, you know, about to go off the deep end and that just that, you know, hey man, how you doing? And they might open up to you, they might not, but just them knowing that you ask.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's big for them. So
yeah.
But yeah, so as fathers, you know, how has becoming a father changed how y'all view mental health?
Man, I tell you, it makes you really patient and in tune to mental health. I have daughters, and my youngest daughter, and I've talked to D. Ray about this several times, and he's been my listening ear. But you know, she's always been a hell of an athlete. And she went off to college, you know, to a 2-year school, and she didn't get much playing time. And I told her, I said, it's just a difference in high school versus college, even with travel ball. Mm-hmm. And it was hard for her. It was mentally hard for her all the time, because it was to the point where her mother and I, we would hate to go to a game. We went there to support the team and her. No matter if she played or not, we was going to stay. Mm-hmm. And it killed her, because we would drive however many hours and she didn't play, she would cry to us between every game. And as a father, man, it just took everything out of me. You can't, me being a former collegiate athlete, I know how it is. It's not the coach. It's just that you at a top tier program. They got players that are there that's been there, and they are all Americans or what have you. It's just the nature of the beast for a freshman. And we reached out to counselors, and she talked to a school counselor and other people too. And, you know, after she received counseling and, you know, talked to people, I'm not going to say she was great, but she was better. Mm-hmm. She understood. Awesome. And the thing is that we expressed to her was, you a scholar first and foremost, then you're an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And Absolutely. So there is life after softball, and softball does not identify who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so once she understood that, she became a better person. Now, with that being said, now she's moving on. She has a offer to play at a 4-year school. She's already committed. So she's going to continue to play, and she ended up playing some her second year, and she's gotten better. And it's all because her mental space.
Mm-hmm.
She had to get that understanding that this is not high school anymore. I'm not the top player on the team anymore. I'm among other top players from other schools too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was a real eye opener for my wife and I, because there were times that we would sit here at home and we would just shed tears because, you know, as grandmama would say, my baby was hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, when she hurt, I hurt. And that was a really tough time for both of us, and especially me being a dad. But I had to, you know, resort back to my college football days and my freshman year. And it's a game. Mm-hmm. Because what I look back at is that I walked away with a bachelor's degree, and I had no debt when I graduated. Mm-hmm. Had no student loans. I sacrificed my body and time to, you know, to play football, but I walked away with something that's benefiting me now.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. What about you, D-Gray?
So the joy I have with being a father in just those aspects of the outdoors is, you know, my son is much younger than AD's children. You know, he's 6. So, you know, I just kind of had my little test, you know, when he got older. You know, does he like being outside? Does he like playing in the dirt? You know, I think I got a Japanese mini truck that was like my first outdoor vehicle. He always want to ride. I got an ATV after that. He always want to ride. You know, he's gone to AD's camp before. He'd love to get on the side by side. I'm like, okay, we're checking boxes. Okay. I may have a little outdoors in here. You know, I put his earmuffs on, and, you know, I fire a firearm. He don't freak out. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's just giving me, like, it's putting a battery in my back. So I'm going to pour into this boy. I'm giving him all the skills and opportunity to hunt when he gets of age. Because we did go to AD's camp one time this winter to do a hunt, and I got it in a foam blind. When I say my son got in that blind and river dance that whole time that he got in there, and we didn't see anything. I knew exactly what it was. I knew what the expectation was. I had a sleeping bag. I had snacks, but I forgot the tablet. If I would have had the tablet, I probably would have had a little bit more success. But as soon as I, you know, laid out that sleeping bag in the blind, gave him his snacks, it took about 10, 15 seconds. Then he was just in my lap, bouncing. I was just like, unload, set firearm. We're going to eat snacks, and we're going to take selfies. And we're going to stay here about 2 hours, and then we're just going to leave and go back to camp. So a good time, you know, you had fun, but, you know, every chance, you know, I get over the years, I'm going to expose him to a little bit more, and put him in an opportunity to potentially harvest something. Now, I tell you, when my child harvests anything, I don't care what it is. It could be a dove, a quail, a rabbit. I am crying.
Yeah.
Unconsolably crying.
Facts.
So, yeah. I look forward to the opportunity.
Yeah, my son missed his first turkey this year with me, and everybody broke me down because he started crying. But we got in the truck. He pulled himself together. It was like, Daddy, let's go get after another one on another farm.
That's right.
Throw, you know, he was back after. But, you know, when my son was about to be born, I was scared to death. Simply because I wasn't scared of, you know, me not being able to take care of him or whatever. I was scared that he was going to go through the same stuff that I went through in this town. Sports wise, school wise, stuff like that. You know, I got called everything but a child of God, starting from like kindergarten all the way up through school.
Lord of mercy.
You know, I was the only black kid on all my teams growing up. And I was like, I don't want him to go through that. And I'm kind of seeing it a little bit now. It's not as bad as I had it, but I can kind of see it possibly going that way. So I feel like once we're going to have that talk pretty soon, I feel like a lot sooner than I'd like to have it. But that was my fear. And it, you know, it still scares me to this day. Sometimes he's going to come home and be like, Daddy, so-and-so called me this, you know, and had to deal with that, but it ain't happened yet. So I thank God for that so far. Mm-hmm. But I used to be one of them guys that I couldn't stand kids. I didn't want to be, around them, like get them away from me.
What time frame is this? How old are you when you could not stand children?
College days, and even closer to 30, I got. I just like people's kids would come over, you know, to the house and stuff, and like Thanksgiving, like family members, man. Like, why are these kids screaming and yelling and hollering? And
oh, you talking about wild kids? I thought you were talking about tame
kids. Period. Like, I didn't want to be
quiet little children in the corner irritate you.
No, I just didn't want to be around. I just didn't like kids, man. And so my nephew was born, my brother Kevin's kid, and he was like super, you know, he always wanted to be around Uncle C when I was around, you know. And I was like, okay, this ain't going to be too bad. You know, he got older, start talking to him on the phone, start playing ball, stuff like that, go watch him play. And I was like, okay, this ain't too bad. And I started noticing, like, most of the kids, like, well, I noticed it from a young age that, like, kids love being around me for some reason. And I didn't like it.
Come on, Grinch. You got to turn that heart.
And and I didn't like it. And mama said, look, these kids are like attracted to you, you know, because of your personality and just whatever, like they see something in you. And I ran away from it for the longest time, you know, and finally, you know, back in education now, like I know that I'm where I'm supposed to be, because just some of the kids that, you know, bad home life, you know, just bad lives, period, growing up, like they don't want to open up to anybody, but they'll come to me.
It's important,
Mr. Williamson, like, hey, I need to talk to you about something, you know, and that to me, you know, gives me like, man, okay. Like, so me thinking now, like I wasn't thinking then, like there might've been a kid back then that was going through something that I just kind of eased. Hey, bro, go on, you know, go back to your mama. Like they wanted to tell me something or get something off their chest, but I didn't want them kids around me. Mm-hmm. So I get to thinking about that a lot of times. So, but now I know, like, you know, if a kid needs to talk to me, like, I'm not going to push them away. Cause like you said, I said earlier, you never know what somebody's going through.
That's right.
So everybody knows at the school, you know, like, hey, if you need to talk to somebody, you know, especially a male, you know, or a black male, cause there's not a lot of, you know, black kids in our school as it is, but like, I don't care what color you are. You need to come talk to me. Let's talk. You know, and I'm gonna get you the best, you know, the best outcome I can. But you know, fatherhood, it's taught me, you know, patience, you know, the main thing. And you know, my father was a very patient man, and I never thought I'd have the patience of him, but and I still don't think I do, but I think it's getting a lot better. And my son knows now, you know, like if something goes down or whatever, the first person he needs to come ask is me. He wants to talk to me. Anything I do, he wants to do like daddy. He wants to go outside, shoot his bow. He wants to go hunting with daddy, you know? So he's following in the footsteps that I did, that aspect, which I love, but it scares me in the future of what might happen. Like some of the stuff that I had to go through, you know, sports wise, you know, when I got to high school, middle school, you know, like just bullies and, you know, just kids just calling you whatever because they daddy didn't like my mama or, you know, because my mom taught school too. So it's like these kids, you know, the parents had my mama in school a lot of times or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, well, my mama didn't like my daddy and I'm you're her son. And bro, that ain't got nothing to do with me. Like, do your work and my mama ain't going to say nothing to you. You know?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, but, you know.
But have you already had that talk with him? Like, hey, son, I'm going to tell you right now, not everybody is going to like you. No matter what you do, you could do absolutely nothing wrong. Some people are not just going to like you, and you're just going to have to accept that as it is. Yes. It's not a fault on them or you. It's just kind of what it is, and you have to be okay with that.
Yes and no. We've had a kind of similar conversation, like very briefly. A situation happened at his school, and we had to, you know, discuss it. It was one of them things. I was like, how in the heck am I going to discuss it with an 8-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was 7 at the time. Might have been 6, but I think he knows now. But I still need to have that one in-depth talk with him. Like, look, the color of your skin, you know, is going to make a lot of people not like you just because you're a little darker than everybody else. It's no fault of yours. You know, that's been taught to them. That's not something that they came out of the womb with. Somebody has told them this, you know, and, you know, you see kids all the time, man, out on the playground playing and nobody know, you know, them kids don't know unless somebody tells them, hey, he's black, he's white. Don't talk to him because he's a little darker than you. We don't like that kind, you know, somebody's got to tell him that. And I'm just hoping, you know, like I said, I'm just hoping it don't happen. I mean, it's 2026. Things are getting a little better. But at the same time, if you look at it, man, we still fighting a lot of the battles that Martin Luther King was battling in the 60s, bro. You know.
Just got to give him the tools. You give him the tools, he'll be prepared. Yeah.
So you just.
Yeah. It's, you know, I had to have that conversation with my daughters. I can't remember the age, but it was a comment that was made. Well, I'm not going to go into exactly what the young lady said with a girl at the time, you know, to one of my youngest daughters. And she was like totally sidetracked. She was totally cut off guard by it. Yeah. But anyhow, you know, it got back to us. So we had to have that conversation with them and just say, hey, look, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the world we live in. We don't raise you like that, but it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It happened to me. I was called that when I was with a game boy, all the time. So it is what it is. So the only thing that you can do is, you know, we have to educate you about it and just, you know, pray, you know, nothing happened to you and just keep your head up high, do what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, go to school, you know, just be successful, be the best person you can be. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing we can do, see Will and D-Ray to change it. It is what it is. And this, people are going to have that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to have that mindset. I hate to say that, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And to prove them otherwise, I mean, that's all we know. I am not, I do, okay, I can't tell you one story that I do know of where someone had an epiphany from that. So, I knew a guy that knew a guy who was a former Klans member. And guess what his wife's name is? Keisha. And they got 2 kids together. So people do change, you know, fine can break barriers. You know, I'm like, I hate people, but good Lord, Keisha, fine? I may need to reconsider. All my hateful friends are at home alone drowning themselves in a bottle of drugs or something. I need a woman. I need to be with somebody. So maybe I just need to just let this thing go. So hopefully somebody out there would just let it go. I'm like, this is stupid. This is getting me nowhere. I'm getting no money from this. I'm getting not any healthier. It's not extending my life. I am wasting my mental health being hateful to someone that I don't even know. It is insane. So just give it up. It doesn't make any logical sense. So why would you do that?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, you know, if there's anybody out there listening, like we've been talking about, man, that, you know, you feel like you're at your wit's end, you know, find that person to talk to, you know, get that, find that pastor, find that friend, find that coworker. But like AD said, you know, make sure it's the right one because, You definitely don't want your business out in the street. You definitely don't want to get the wrong advice. So,
right.
But yeah, this has definitely been one that has been on my heart all night, you know, to get this out. So I appreciate y'all boys, for hopping on with me, but any last words before we get out of here?
D-Ray?
Get out, enjoy the woods. The woods can restore your mental health. Get out and go fishing. Just get outside. Enjoy life, because we never know when God is going to call us home. And being outdoors can improve your mental health for you and your family. You just give yourself an opportunity to enjoy it.
Yep.
Agreed. Just to echo what D-Ray said, man, just get outdoors. If it's not, it don't have to be hunting. Everybody's not a hunter.
Right.
Everybody's not a fisherman or anything like that. Just walk. Go maybe, you know, get a gym membership. Just walk, go to the park and walk. There's all kind of places now. I know where Daryl and I live, the city and the county, they are doing a big job, I mean, a really big job of developing a lot of parks, walking area, tracks and things like that. They're trying to promote health, exercising. So just get out and walk, talk to someone. If you have a better half, you know, talk with them. Find out if you need a counselor. I know with my job, we have a counselor that we can call. If we need to talk to someone, they can assign us a counselor. We need to talk to someone. With my job, I see a lot of different things. I see, you know, people that are fatally injured. I see a lot of bad accidents, things of that nature. So oftentimes that I deal with things that I see from work. So if the opportunity present itself, I need to talk to someone, I have a number that I could call and receive counseling, because I don't want to bring work home to my wife, to my family.
Right.
She doesn't deserve that. She deserves AD. She deserves, you know, the kids deserve daddy. And that's what they're going to get, because I'm not going to bring that home. So at the end of the day, like I said previously, if you're going to talk to a friend, make sure that's the right friend. If you need to talk to someone, you know, find a church, talk to a pastor, just a counselor, you know, anyone that's a professional counselor or something of that nature. But been a great podcast. We talk almost every day. We text almost every day. So it seems like I'm sitting here talking to some buddies that I've known for years.
Oh, for sure.
Great conversation.
Right. We got our group. Go find yours.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, man, this podcast will be out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever you get your podcasts. Usually running on Mondays. You know, click, like, support it, YouTube, you know, run up these likes. And we're going to put out some clips, just, you know, hopefully to help somebody out that might be struggling with mental health and hasn't found that person yet. So this was a good one, fellas. I appreciate y'all. And as always, big game, small game, all game. We do this too.